ladies and gentlemen, hello and welcome back to What's a Review. Thanks so much for joining us. Although, Tom, I guess that begs a question. Are they actually joining us because we're through audio?
I guess in some essence we're transferring audible information into the listener's ears. So in a way we are joining them, but in a way we are not.
Well, as odd as this is going to sound, I like to kind of envision that the listener's sitting back maybe in like a nice recliner or something, eyes are closed, and it just sounds like we're in the room with them.
That's a great image, and I think in that essence as well, there's lots of images that you can conjure of where our listeners might be. You might be on the train to work, you might be coming home from work, you could be stuck in traffic, or you could be on a rail replacement bus like I've been on for the past 5 weeks. You could be anywhere, but nonetheless.
I mean, they really have to fix up what's going on with all those station works. Like, I understand that, you know, the station has to be fixed and all this and that, but the fact is, it's near Christmas, people have places to be.
Well, it's finishing up on Sunday, so that's a relief.
And that's the end of my rant.
Mine too.
There we go. So, what are we going to review today? I think actually we did spoil it in episode 22, which for those who missed episode 22 was indeed Little Miss Sunshine. It was a great review. We had a lot of fun, so check that one out. Mm. But, Tom, it's time to grab a VB, mate. You know, sit out with a couple of cans of
maybe
beer.
Maybe a Carlton as well.
Have a bit of a sausage on the barbie.
Oh, and, I love a good sausage and a 420 pie.
And we're going to be watching the castle here.
Oh, the castle.
Yeah, that's right.
You mean the castle from 1997?
Yeah, the 1997 castle, you know.
The one with Michael Caton in it.
The one with Michael Caton.
Oh, I love that castle.
My name is Dale Kerrigan, and this is my story. Dad is the backbone of our family. He made our pool table.
This is my backyard.
Is that the runway there?
Sometimes you think they're going to land right on top of you.
Well, I reckon we're the luckiest family in the world.
But one day in June, a knock at the door was to change all that.
This is a compulsory acquisition.
Our bloody government's trying to take my house.
You will be compensated.
You can't buy what I've got.
Miramax Home Entertainment presents...
I'm going to hit him with a big artillery.
It's justice, it's law, it's the vibe.
Vibe?
Yeah.
The story of a family...
Now that is a head of hair.
...who wouldn't let the government take their house.
But it's not a house, it's a home.
Without a fight.
In the High Court today.
Case of Daryl versus Goliath.
The castle. There's no place like this home.
Yeah, indeed, it is the castle from 1997, which is a very important film in Australian history. At least I think so.
Absolutely.
So let's read what is just the quickest blurb ever. Here we go. Okay. A working class family from Melbourne, Australia. Hey, Tom, that's where we live.
Oh, really?
Fight City Hall after being told they must vacate their beloved family home to allow for infrastructural expansion. Tom, I always love getting you to open up the discussion here, and that's exactly what we're going to do. Take us away with your opening thoughts of The Castle from 1997.
Well, Ben, I've always had the castle in my periphery growing up, merely because it's such a holy grail in Australian film, which is quite funny because if you look at it, it doesn't have any fancy graphics, it doesn't have a profound cast of international actors and actresses. It's merely a movie typically being Australian, and I think that's the true essence of what this film and many other films to follow, like The Dish, are all about.
Just while you're on that point, what struck me, especially in the first 5-10 minutes of viewing this, now I hadn't watched this film maybe in about 6-7 years, because if you recall back at high school, we had to study this film and we watched it about 10-15 times.
And then there's another reason why it's so integral to Australian culture. They put it within the Australian education and say, you must watch this, you must write an essay on this. And that definitely goes to show how much we herald this movie.
Yeah, we certainly hold it in very, very high regard. But I got the biggest shock of the whole film for me actually came at the end when I realised the film was made in 1997. I thought this film was from the 80s. I don't know what planet I'm living on.
No.
But this film's a lot more recent than I actually expected. So maybe it's just the really cheap, low production values of this film.
The sensational thing about that is that this film was completely done in 6 weeks.
Yeah, I can definitely believe that, actually, now that you mentioned that.
But it doesn't wear a feather at all. It hasn't... Well, it has aged considerably a bit, but in that essence, it's still very watchable today.
I think what you're trying to refer to is the fact that if you look at the aesthetics of it, visually and everything, yes, it has aged, but I think the script is just timeless.
It's golden.
I was laughing at this all afternoon long as I was watching it. And another thing that stuck out to me is, my goodness, does this film love to come up with great catchphrases that are used in Australian language today. Like, you hear it all the time, don't you, really?
Such as, "You, Ben, are an ideas man."
That's Steve. He's an ideas Steve man. Steve
Kerrigan.
Yeah, there's so many different catchphrases. How's the serenity?
We're going to Bonnie Doon. Doom.
We're going to Bonnie Doon.
There's many.
There's heaps, but sometimes it almost falls to the film's... it's kind of like a failure on the film's part in a weird sense that it relies on it a little bit too heavily at times. I was starting to get very, very annoyed with the whole, "Hey, Dad, do you want some jousting sticks? Or how much is he asking? Oh, $2.50? Oh, tell him he's dreaming." Look, first three times are pretty funny, but this joke gets milked, I think, 7-8 times, and it's one of my little issues with the movie throughout, is that sometimes they realise they're onto a good line, and they milk that damn cow for all it's worth, my goodness.
I think the best ones, though, are the ones that only happen once. One of my favourites is when we're still meeting all of the characters and Dale is still introducing them. And we're introduced to... I can't remember the name for the sake of me now, but the one in prison.
Oh, Wayne.
Wayne, yeah. We're introduced to Wayne for the first time. And they're in the cell and they're sitting across his table and just the whole dialogue is, "How's Mum? Good. How's Dad? Yes. Good." Stuff like that is absolutely golden.
Yeah, that's an excellent scene. Another
great moment that stands out to me when our narrator goes, "I didn't know how I was going to tell Wayne." And he just bluntly says it out and he goes, "You're joking." Stuff like that. Those cutscenes are very clever.
Yeah, I definitely notice there's always this reliance on whatever the last line fed through that commentary. It usually gets repeated by the character as soon as the commentary's finished. And as you said, it does create this quite comedic rhythm and timing, which I think is a really nice way to kind of feed you back into the actual scene that's taking place. And also for those film buffs, the actor who played Wayne Kerrigan's first name was Wayne Ho, played Wayne Kerrigan.
So, there you go, I didn't know that.
Yeah, there you go, so that's a little bit of fun. So this film it's very, very simple to follow. I don't think anyone could really sit down and watch this and be completely puzzled and confused about what's going on. No. Would that be a fair assessment? I think it is.
I think so too.
And one thing we realised from the get-go is that our main character, our protagonist, if you like, Daryl Kerrigan, is a simple family man. He loves things as they are. He doesn't, he doesn't expect the world of things, far different to the father in Little Miss Sunshine that we reviewed the week before.
Yeah.
Who kind of had this superficial outlook on life, whereas Daryl Kerrigan, very, very different.
And the great thing is, I can think of so many Daryl Kerrigans out there, and they just fit so well into Australian culture. And I think this film almost kind of paints a picture of a stereotypical Aussie Melbournean family.
Oh, it does. It does an excellent job. And I think what I like, the real message behind this film, the fact that, you can't buy memories and you can't buy love, if you know what I mean. And that comes across very much in the passion of Daryl Kerrigan to fight for his home. The airport, they're going to be taking my home. Mm. How dare they, the bastards, I'm against them. So let's fight them. And through that, comedy abound.
Yes. And I think also... every character, somebody can relate to as well. I don't know about you, but when this film is talked about and we're on this subject, I often get tagged to Dale Kerrigan, mainly just for my... I'm sometimes just quite blunt. There's a great scene which pretty much speaks my personality. It's when they've recently come back from the honeymoon and they're trying to tell everybody everything. And Dale's just going and goes, oh, what was the movie on the plane?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
It was Twister. Stuff like that. It's just stuff that I just randomly do all the time and I just don't realize, but the people around me know that I do it so often. So, yeah, that scene is quite a fond one for me.
I must say, it's not something that you definitely do on the podcast. Like when I'm talking, you don't keep asking all these questions and, you know, trying to get the sentence out. But I guess I have noticed it one-on-one in conversation sometime, you know, start a story. What's that? Well, hang on, I'm getting to it. Well, what's that? But yeah, it's something that I think we can all relate to. I think everyone does it in a sense.
But Ben, the question is, what did you have for dinner?
Yeah, exactly. Oh gosh, very, very funny. Going back to Wayne quickly, I had a thought about this. Did that character even need to be in the movie?
I feel like he was very much a sounding board for Dale. I feel like that was his kind of role in the film because Dale didn't necessarily have a major part in the grand scheme of things where the plot lies. He still has to tell the story. And I feel like in some essence, he's kind of almost telling the story, not just to the audience, but to Wayne. He's kind of filling him in on the day-to-day life of the Kerrigans.
Yeah, no, that's a point. I didn't really think of it like that, but I guess that makes more sense now.
Yeah, that's the way I've kind of always seen it.
Yeah, because, you know, like he got enough, they mentioned him all the time, but then I was kind of just wondering, like, how important actually is he? Like, you know, he's confined to a cell and wasn't exactly doing all too much. We should mention that, surprise, surprise, Eric Banner appears in this movie.
He does.
He kind of just comes out of nowhere and he's in the background. He's kind of in the shadows in this movie. He plays Con. But, you know, it's funny. I look at him here and I just think, my God, that guy played the Incredible Hulk. Like, how many people actually remember that?
I know. It's hilarious. And I think just the whole time he's there, he's just so subtle in everything he does.
It really is. And it starts to make me wonder, you know, we probably should review The Incredible Hulk, the 2003 Eric Banner film at some point, just for a laugh.
We should definitely go back to a few Marvel movies that make us laugh. Like, I know the Tobey Maguire Spider-Man films make us chortle a little bit.
Oh, my goodness, yeah, they're definitely a favourite. Yeah. So, yeah, who knows, maybe there will be a Spider-Man coming up ever so soon. But as we move along here, Tom, this was directed by Rob Sitch, and it had four different writers. And do you think that's fair? Are more writers better or a less? Like, how do we justify this? Because to me, the script was still pretty basic, even though we had four different people writing this thing.
I feel like the idea of... Have you ever heard of the phrase writer's room?
Yes, I have. I know how they work.
I feel like, in a very similar sense, this is almost like an early version of the writer's room mechanism. You've got these four people writing a story together, and I feel this is very before its time. It's only now that more and more shows, the likes of which you see on Netflix, are being written by writer's rooms. A bunch of creative people putting their heads together and going, right, this is what we're going to do, rather than John Doe writing episode one of something. They're all just doing it together, which I think is an awesome thing.
Yeah, I think it's a cool thing. I could imagine it creating a million headaches at the same time, like trying to get everybody on the same page, and then you've got writers' egos and, you know...
I guess that's a good thing, though, because if you have an egocentric writer who's just going to be self-indulgent on a script that he writes for a film series or a TV series, it's going to come through to the audience. They're going to know. You know, for example, if you're watching an episode of Doctor Who, which episode is a Stephen Moffat episode because of his tropes that he uses. All of his episodes have kids in them, if you've picked that up.
No, I never had. But
it's just one of those funny things. As well, who writes his own stuff, and throughout all his stuff, there are seniors in it. It's just one of those things that don't necessarily slip through the mind, but it just kind of seeps through our stuff.
It just happens until someone probably points it out, and you're like, hang on a minute, I do write that a lot.
Yeah.
So we get introduced here to Dennis DeNuto, who's played by Tyrell Mora. who is just a hilarious lawyer.
Probably one of my favourite characters in this film.
Yeah, he makes this movie. So for those just wondering, at this point, Daryl has decided, that's it, I'm going to take on, you know, the authority or whatever. They can't take my house, so I need a lawyer and I'm going to fight them in court. So he hires Dennis, who isn't exactly the smartest, or probably he's not right for the job. Is that fair to say?
He's a very colourful character, if that expresses much.
He is. And I got to say, like, one of my favourite scenes of this movie is just getting introduced to him early on. He's just swearing at the printer, at the photocopy every 5 seconds.
It's one of those running gags in the movie as well, which I really adore.
Yeah, it keeps coming back. And it has a nice payoff at the end. But Dennis obviously is then, he has a bit of a chat with Daryl, it's not really my thing or whatever. But then we get in the court and we go, okay, what has Dennis got? And clearly he has shit all, Tom. He doesn't really know what he's doing.
He's got one thing. He's got Marbo. It's the vibe. It's all Marbo.
Yeah, so it made me wonder, to be honest, more so on just those ridiculous wigs these court judges wear.
They're hilarious. They're very laughable.
I just want to know, like, where can I find one of those? Because I just want to walk down the street, just, you know, casually with one of those on my head and, you know, just have a bit of a dance or whatever. But no, in all seriousness, Dennis is not doing very well. So I love how he actually goes up to the court judge, who can't give him any advice, God forbid. But he actually asks, he goes, how am I doing? Like, do I have a shot? Like, brilliant. I love that, Tom. I thought that was hilarious.
And that's quite, that's something that definitely comes back in a later scene when we're in the final courtroom scene. He gets the thumbs up from the rest of his team, which is quite a nice little throwback to that moment, I reckon.
That's right. The other thing that's interesting to note in this initial court scene is the fact that Daryl has no idea that who he's hired is absolutely terrible. He's got no idea.
Daryl's quite a clueless character, which is great for a protagonist, I reckon.
Yeah, he seriously has no idea. But maybe, you know, he's just a simpleton, isn't he?
He is, yeah. He's just a typical Australian bloke.
And it kind of also makes me think, you know, I know there's people out there who, once they establish a thought, you know, like, I know this person and I respect this person, so whatever they do is great. You know those people?
Yeah,
I just sense that's kind of the mindset he's in. He's like, well, I know Dennis. Dennis is a lovely guy. We get on well.
And he says this throughout the movie as well. He says it to supporting characters. He goes, look, I trust this person and they're going to do a good job.
That's right. So in his eyes, he can't see, you know, he can't actually understand that, well, actually he's doing a crap job. He's just kind of blind. I don't know if he chooses to be blind or he's just that stupid. He's most likely just that stupid.
Yeah.
So anyway, afterwards, we this is a very important moment. So Daryl goes out, has a little bit of a smoke with his cigarette, and he meets the... If you're looking for an Australian person who's just like the greatest person on earth and the nicest person on earth, it has to be Charles Bud Tingwell. Like, how can it not be?
Yeah, rest in peace.
Yes, absolutely. You know what, funnily enough, when we were doing this review, I was actually went into another room just to grab some papers, and holy crap, we've actually got Bud Tingwell's autobiography at our house.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I didn't even know. excuse me. I'll have to definitely have a bit of a read of that if I find time, but I don't really read books as much as I should. Anyway, Bud Tingwell plays Lawrence Hamill, and Lawrence is a retired barrister.
Probably the nicest person in his film.
Oh, yes, absolutely. There's not a bad word to say about good old Laurie. I don't know why. Maybe the fact that his name was Laurie, and he was like a little bit of a bigger guy, and he was kind of older, but I just kept on thinking of Laurie Oakes. God knows why. But anyway, he is indeed a retired barrister who doesn't... Here's what I love about the character, Tom. He tries so hard not to put down anyone.
No.
Especially Dennis.
Yeah.
And there's multiple times where Daryl says, oh, you know, we've got Dennis defending me. He's doing a great job. And God bless Bud Tingwell. He's trying his absolute hardest. not to put him down. That's something I really like about this film.
Me too, absolutely. And I think he's not the only person who does that as well. Daryl is a very good instigator for that mindset and behavior as well. He just respects everybody around him who respects him and the work that they do. Thus, Laurie is doing exactly the same thing, but on his own plane of existence.
There's an interesting moment in this film where it starts to take a little bit of a turn. It's quite an interesting turn as well. The fact is Daryl's been offered $25,000 extra. They've looked again at the settlement and they've said, okay, well, he's not budging, so let's buy him out.
Yeah.
Which is actually what happens a lot in this world, which is sad, but that's just how it goes. Anyway, you can't take away my home, he says. He keeps on saying it. So afterwards, declines, screw you, money. And then things get interesting. Tom, I love when that goon just turns up at the door. He's like one of those Mr. Burns hired goons from The Simpsons. You know the part
I'm talking about? I love this bit. Yeah, and I love the part that follows as well.
Oh, it's excellent. So this guy's in his leather jacket and he's like, look, here's a message. Take it. You better take the money or else there's going to be consequences, rah, rah, rah. And then, holy crap, but who turns up but good old Steve Kerrigan with a freaking rifle at the door, points it right at him. That was unreal. What a moment.
And where did he get it?
From the trading post.
Absolutely, he did.
Yeah. That's the best. I got to quote this. He's like, what the F are you doing? He's like, oh, he tried to threaten you. And he goes, and where the hell did you get that from? I don't know. Trading post? How much? Oh, no, 150? Dreaming.
Sell it.
It's great stuff. There's plenty of laughs in this. This is a very easy watch, this film. And to be honest, if you're running short of time and you just want a quick watch and you haven't seen a film before, it only goes 84 minutes. That ain't that much.
That's pretty good.
Especially for a film these days, you know, like that's very, very short. Even though it wasn't these days, it was 97. But off we go. So, Tom, where else do we discuss about this film? Do you want to look further into the second court case? Is there anything burning on your mind that you have to get off your chest?
The scene that immediately follows when Steve and Daryl decide, look, they're trying to fight us, we're going to fight them.
Yes.
So they go to the house of the other goons and it looks like they're threatening them in the face, but it's literally just in the voice box at the front of the gates. So what do they decide to do? They decide to take the gates. And I think this scene is absolutely hilarious. And the scene that follows on as well, when the policeman, who's a really kind of friendly gentleman, comes and yes, just gives them just a bit of a friendly tap on the shoulder. He goes, put the gates around the back, Daryl. I just love this bit.
Yeah. There's this whole build-up of the fact that, I don't know what you're talking about. How are you accusing me of stealing these gates and doing something when you got no proof? He forgot, being simple-minded Daryl, that he left the freaking gates at the front of the house. I thought that was good. That was a good script writing, that. I really enjoyed it. And if we can go back 2 seconds, you mentioned that he's actually kind of, you know, saying some mean words to that gentleman through the speakerphone thing.
Yeah.
Holy crap. If you want an example of a typical sounding Australian businessman, it's that guy right there. He's like, all right, please leave or I'm calling the police.
It's just pretty much in a nutshell.
Oh man, it just kills me. It's just amazing.
Now there's a scene I definitely like to look at because I think it just shows how big Daryl's heart is. They're just eating around a dinner table. And just all of a sudden, he goes, hey, Daryl, tell us what you did today. And he's going, no, he's a little bit shy. And he goes, come on, tell them. And he just goes, Daryl dug a hole. It just goes to show, like, how much, again, Daryl appreciates just out of everybody. He finds their niche. And for Daryl, it's digging holes. And it's one of the only points where Daryl really has an intervention with the main story, which is quite interesting. Daryl's quite an onlooker in this movie, but every now and again he kind of pops in and out of what's going on. He's the question asker, and those questions lead to more depth that we as the audience kind of follow Dale around for.
I think it's also a solid reminder, just generally in life, how sometimes we get caught up with always thinking of big, complex things. And sometimes, isn't it nice just to get amazed by something really simple and just be thankful for simple things? I think that's what I get out of this character a lot.
Yeah, absolutely.
So we move on a little bit, not too much further through the movie, but my goodness, God has sent his messenger, and in walks good old Laurie or Bud Tingwell. He has arrived. Lawrence Hamill has somehow mysteriously arrived at their house, and I love how he kind of they sweep this under the rug, like with the script. He's like, "How did you find where I live?" He's like, "Oh, you know, us barristers know a way around." Like, I thought that was interesting. Kind of just like, no, we couldn't be bothered explaining that. So anyway, long story short, Lawrence says, "Look, I'm interested in your case, and I want to help you fight them." And wasn't Daryl a bit shocked about this?
He was. He was very much so.
Yes, and from here on, we get, you know, here's what was missing, Tom. I really wanted like a little silly montage scene of Daryl helping out Lawrence, but Lawrence always looking at him like you're an idiot. I thought that would have been really funny.
That would have been very, like, that would have been an icing on the cake, I reckon.
Yeah, there's not a lot missing from this movie. I just think something like that would have been really good because they're such different characters. You got one who's super intellectual and the other one who's really free and easygoing. And I think if you got them to just clash a little bit more, that could have been some comedy gold. But, you know, life goes on.
There's a spin-off there waiting to happen, The Adventures of Laurie and Daryl. And that's probably the opening title sequence, I reckon.
Yeah, would be. There's a point on that later on that I'll mention as well. I'll mention it now. I'm really thankful that of all the sequels that were ever made, that this film never got a sequel.
Me too.
I think this was exactly all it needed to be, and they didn't need to make another one, and thank goodness they were smart enough to say, you know what, our legacy is the castle, and that's going to define this film, and it's not going to be ruined by any further sequels. So
on that note, definitely. I'm really surprised how big this movie became in America.
Right. Yeah, that is interesting. Yeah, it has been seen overseas. So.
Like, hearing the reviews about it and, like, how simple it is kind of just got them. I don't know how it happened, but it's just something that did. Another movie like this which got a lot of Americans hooked was, I think I might be wrong, made by the same people who did this movie, was Malcolm.
Malcolm, okay. Yeah, I've definitely heard of it.
Yeah, it's definitely one that we should most definitely review on What to Review, because it's a film that I can definitely relate to in some degree, which we'll definitely allude more to whenever we do that.
I'll tell you what, just on the whole talk of What to Review, if we're talking about what we want to review in the future, I'm just putting my hand up. Let's do a horror, and let's do a good one, something genuinely scary. It was just a thought that came across my mind.
Absolutely. I don't think we've done that yet, and I definitely want to cover as many genres as we can.
Yeah, it'll be great. Speaking of horror, we are getting to the big court date here in this film. My goodness, the court date's already arrived, but luckily this time Daryl is a bit more prepared because he's got Laurie by his side, one of the best barristers of all time, who's come out of retirement Laurie. Just to help him. And not just Laurie, you've got Laurie on your right, and then you've got Dennis on the left, which I love that Dennis is included throughout this whole scene that's
this
coming.
This is Dennis's golden moment, I think. He's doing all the things one, that two, he normally three, does, but four. It's to the benefit of Laurie.
So we're in the courtroom, and what immediately strikes me is, holy crap, the opposition's already got 5 to 6 lawyers. Like, how the hell are they even going to be able to tackle this? Interestingly enough, though, they don't have Charles Bud Tingwell, and that's kind of, Laurie is definitely the feather in good old Daryl's cap. That's the saying, isn't it? I hope I haven't got that wrong. Great. So, here we go. This is a very enjoyable scene to watch. There's something about the acting from all these characters that you really get invested in, especially in this court scene. Now, for the most point, they're just talking, you know, constitution and law jargon. So it shouldn't really be all that engaging. But I think when you know kind of what's on the line, especially for Daryl, and it's playing this really kind of epic music in the background. I think you really get lost in this scene, like in a good way.
And I think, again, it's because of Dale's storytelling that we as the audience can engage with what's going on.
You really feel kind of drawn to what's the outcome going to be, what comedy's going to happen, is there going to be any comedy? And overall, it's a pretty cool scene. And speaking of which, Tom, I don't know how, but I want one of those court funny wigs or those hair pieces. Man, I'd absolutely love one. I think I did mention it earlier, but I'm going to mention it again. I really, really want one. If just one quick thing, if someone can hook me up with one of those in the mail, I'm not going to tell you where I live, so try to guess. But man, could you imagine, Tom, like coming home from a day at work and just seeing that thing in the mail? Oh man.
If I want a hat of some kind, it has to be one of those
graduate hats. Now, don't do this. I know just recently for our show on the Facebook page, kind, you just actually always wear put, one of those. You know, the photo of us, but we've got the Christmas hats on, but maybe you got to do one with us with the wigs. Don't. Anyway, as we move along, we get to the judge's decision, and Daryl doesn't realise that he's actually won, Tom. He's blind. It's almost as if he had come to the terms that he was defeated, and some respect he had, because if we go back a few scenes before, he's actually already starting to pack things up, box things up. It's like you know, he's finally accepted the fact that it's just quite not, a sad replacing scene working. But anyway, I'm going back and forth here, but back to the court case. Dennis, who struggles to put things together well, he actually knew that, indeed, Daryl had won the case. And there is a great moment here. And Tom, take us through this moment where Daryl realises that he's won.
So, at first, when they hear the verdict of the case, both Dennis and Daryl don't realise that they actually have won. So they're kind of putting their heads down in shame. They're like, shit, we've lost. But then Dennis and Laurie go, no, we've won. And then he goes, you bloody ripper! Which is absolutely, just blows everything out of the water in the setting of a courtroom. And everyone's shaking hands, and the five other lawyers on the other side are all looking pretty remorseful. And then Daryl kind of leans over to them and he goes, oh, better luck next time. And they kind of give the nice smile. And he just turns over again and goes, you dickheads. And they all just look absolutely shocked at him. Golden scene.
I think it is a golden scene. I reckon you could watch that scene over and over and you'd still get a laugh at that.
I do every time.
It was just perfect. And another thing I like is the fact that, you know, they'd probably remember him for years and years to come. Like, especially those court judges, you know. Daryl's not someone you forget all that easily.
No, not at all.
So we get right at the end of the film. And, sorry, had something in my throat. Goodness me.
Oh, strength.
Yeah, with audio, people would have been thinking, like, what the hell is going on there? Anyway, sorry. Let's throw a party. We've won the court case. We've looked after everyone in the neighbourhood. We're not moving house. So let's have a big party. And what a big party it is.
It was a huge party. I want to be there.
Well, so did I. You know, whatever they had in that punch bowl, man, hook me up. So what was cool about this is that we see a few different Australian icons kind of pop up in this scene, including Santo, who actually penned a part of the script.
He did.
Or a quarter of the script, at least. There was four of them that wrote it. Tom, I think Santo should have been in this film a bit more than just a quick cameo.
He should have, absolutely.
So maybe that was an opportunity lost, but sometimes when writers act in their own films, it becomes a bit self-indulgent, so I can kind of see why maybe he said no to that, even though he did appear at the end. So, I mean, let's sum up this film. There are a lot of great laughs. There are a lot of great moments. Did I mention the honourable mentions for characters?
You haven't.
Oh, I haven't. Okay. Just quickly, some honourable mentions for characters. We've got Farouk in this film, who actually also I laughed because this actor actually plays a character in one of my favourite two series shows called Lana and Woodley. He plays a postman with a speech impediment.
Great episode.
And here he plays a foreigner, and there's a few foreign stereotype kind of jokes at play here, especially with bombing. That just seemed to be the go-to. So he has two key lines about bombing people if they're going to, you know, try to take advantage of him or whatever. It gets a laugh no matter where you screen this film every time. It's quite a good, good little joke from him. And we also have my favourite character, side character, that is, my favourite side character, who's Jack, the neighbour across the road, who's 93. Now, there's a good moment here where, like, very early on in the film, he finds out what's going on. They've been issued the letter, the notice, saying, you know, we're taking you to court over this. And he goes, oh, I better tell Jack. And
he just jumps the fence.
He just jumps over the fence. He absolutely sprints down. Oh, man, it kills me. Opens up the door, and Jack just has this look of distraught on his face. And you just know at that point, like, oh, my God, he already knows.
He goes, someone's going to take my house, Daryl.
They're going to take my house. You know, that line actually reminds me, if you go back to our review of Johnny English, they took some of my blood. Good stuff. So anyway, as we wrap up our thoughts of The Castle here, overall, I think it's an excellent film. You really care for the characters. Mm. You really want Daryl to overcome this authority. You want him to just enjoy what's his, what's rightfully his. His memories, living with his family. It's really important. And therefore, I give this film a 4-star. But my goodness, Tom, we forgot to mention the pool room.
Oh, the pool room.
So the pool room essentially is his safe haven. It's his shrine.
It's his happy place.
It is his happy place. Anything that's important to him, an item, a photo, anything goes in the pool room. It's significant.
Yeah.
Very much so. I think kind of we all have our own pool rooms. I like to think that Tom's pool room is just his collection of Doctor Who DVDs.
Pretty much. I bathe in them every day.
Yeah, that's right. I know. I've seen. Maybe not. But yeah, we all have our own pool room on things that we very much cherish. And for Daryl, that was his. And it's kind of a bit of an Australian saying now, you know, that's going straight to the pool room, in which you can buy this DVD, and they even had like a special edition, which was a pool room edition. I don't know if anybody had that.
I do.
You have it.
I do indeed have the pool room edition. It's got a nice slip case with a very kind of soft velvety cover to represent the pool table.
That's incredible.
It's great.
Oh, man. That's amazing. So anything else to kind of sum up the film, Tom? Do you like the commentary at the end and kind of how we see what's changed with the characters?
I do. I do like how every character has a summary, and it's a happy summary as well. I think for my honourable mentions in characters, one kudos definitely has to go to Sal Kerrigan, who's the mum. She's definitely the ongoing support in this family. She's the backbone, in the words of Dale. And she's just got a very simplistic way of living. Her ideology about her family, about Daryl, is spot on. And the idea that the Greyhounds brought them together is adorable. Another character that we haven't mentioned throughout all of this is Tracy and her fiancé, the professional kickboxer.
I think I did. I did mention him very early on in our review, just saying how Eric Banner was in the Hulk and kind of laughed.
Yeah.
But yes.
We've touched on him briefly, but I feel like those three, as well as Farouk and Dennis DeNudo, they're all very much characters who jump in and out at various points. And they stood out for me very much so. But I think that definitely the trophy goes to Laurie.
Yes, I agree. I think Laurie is the best performance in this film. Probably just because he's so damn likable. Like, yeah. Man. I think I just love Laurie. But who knows? I mean, what the guy was like, 80. So I give it a 4-star. Tom gives it a 4-star.
I do.
And what we're saying is The Castle's worth a watch. Make sure to check it out. If you've already seen it, perhaps you might want to go back and watch it after listening to our review. But it's definitely a film worth a look. It deserves to be watched. And you'll get a laugh out of it, and you'll feel pretty good after watching it as well.
And look, so I think, yeah, every time you go about your day, you'll just look at the world a bit differently. You'll just go outside, you'll look up to the sky, and you'll see the power lines, and they'll remind you of man's ability to create electricity.
Yeah, that's right. No, it's definitely worth a watch. So we thank you guys very much for listening to another episode of What to Review, episode 23. As we kick off next week's episode, Tom will give us some thoughts on Class. He's finished watching the series. He just needs a little bit more time to digest
what he's seen. I just need to, yeah, sink my teeth maybe into a second watch and just decide what's going on in that head of mine.
And, Tom, I haven't really discussed this one with you on the air, but I might as well mention it. I'm thinking of doing a little What to Review extra one-off episode where I might just take it solo and I'll take people through my thoughts of the brand new Metallica record called Hardwired to Self-Destruct. After all, I have listened to it about 30 times now, so just I wouldn't mind reviewing that. It's a great one.
In that regard, too, I may do a solo episode myself. Maybe on some expanding universe Doctor Who material of the likes of Big Finish, maybe some of the books. But that may be more closer to the new year, I reckon.
Yeah, perhaps some additional bits and pieces coming in the pipeline. You know, just to kind of keep these releases going. And that's a fact too. Like, am I being self-indulgent? Like, does any of our listeners even like Metallica, or is it just me? Probably just me.
I think there's something for everybody on this podcast. We've got Metallica, music, we've got sci-fi, we've got every genre that we're covering. And as we said before, we definitely want to cover some horror as well, which is something to look forward to.
Oh, yes. Yes, I'm very much keen. It's looking bright for the podcast. There's plenty going on. So thank you again, wherever you are in the world. Hopefully you don't have a stressful day ahead. Just relax and just enjoy yourself. Look, if this podcast, you get some kind of enjoyment out of it, takes your mind off whatever you're doing, then that's awesome.
Tell your friend, tell your dog, tell your neighbour.
Yeah, get onto it. Listen to us, because we're the freaking best. No, we're not.
That's pretty self-indulgent in itself.
It is. So with that said, guys, and I've said with that said probably about 100 times now, thank you very much. We'll see you around next time for episode 24 of What to Review.
Take it easy. Have a joyous festive season. And goodbye.
Crack open a VB. Actually, probably don't. It tastes terrible. But watch the castle. Have some sausages. Put some sauce on it. Fair shake of the sauce bottle, says Kevin Rudd. Enjoy the film. Thank you, guys. We'll see you next time.
See you later.